For October 18th, 2013, we talk about the Watch Dogs delay, Beyond Two Souls, and we ask you, hey, what bothers you about games? Welcome to the 38th level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
My name is David Meinsma.
And my name is Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. Thank you so much for joining us, everybody. We're really happy that you're tuning in. Let's see here. What do we have in store for you today? The huge. Going to talk about some news. Going to talk about some games. We've got a multiplayer. But Ben has informed us that there is a very special game that he is going to be playing over the course of this recording session tonight. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, so I started feeling sick at work today, and so now I'm sick, and the game I'm going to be playing is I'm going to do a shot of NyQuil at the beginning of this podcast, and we will all see if I'm awake at the end of the podcast.
Yeah, here we go. All right, so
shot.
Yeah, everybody okay, so, knows their beverage.
Okay, here we go.
Respective. All right.
Clink. Boost.
Clink.
Yep, that never tastes good.
Nope. Oh. No, I was pounding on my desk. Yeah.
There's also a dog barking outside at my place. I don't know if that's what you hear.
It's the NyQuil dog.
Yeah.
There's no dog in the background.
Oh, man. The NyQuil dog. He's all green.
Ooh. It's like the absinthe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the green.
The green fairy.
the green fairy dog mother. I don't... Oh, I think this is a shared hallucination. So thank you for showing up, even though you're sick, Ben. Although I was recording a podcast with a horrible ear infection last week. So,
That's true.
You know, I just quit trying to bite my steez. But anyway, there is a show to do. Is there any business that anybody wants to attend to before we get started? No? All right, let's go.
No, we missed you guys last week. We missed everyone last week.
What's that?
I said we missed everyone last week.
We did a show last week.
We did. Oh, was it 2 weeks before?
Yeah.
I don't know how time works. I'm shutting
up.
No,
it's
now.
Linear. It proceeds in a linear fashion.
Have you been shooting the NyQuil?
I can understand confusion. Yeah. You know, since analog clocks are circular, and we have yet to. Yeah.
Okay. It's just cut that part out, and I'll pretend like I still.
No,
have
I'm leaving it in until you learn.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Let's
public shaming.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do a brief.
I still missed everyone, even if we did a show last week. No. I love you guys.
Keep on saying nice things.
Except you. You know who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
Steve. You know what you
are. All right, it's time for the brief where people talk about news and shit regarding games. I've got one that I want to do.
Do it.
All right.
So, yeah. One of the big games that was coming out for the next generation consoles was
going.
Yeah, sorry, it's big. It's a big one. You know, so you can help me tell the story. But Ubisoft's Watch Dogs looks really cool. I was excited about it. It has been pushed to 2014, spring of 2014, likely around March before the end of the fiscal year. Not before the end of the fiscal year, but before the end of the first quarter, the usual Christmas around Easter time that we usually get. It was initially slated to launch in November alongside the, you know, Xbox One and PlayStation 4. There are also going to be some current gen versions and the PC version. It was really going to be the killer app for a lot of these new consoles. However, on Ubisoft's financial results call, Yves Guillemot, I believe the CEO of Ubisoft, said, "Today we can say we already have a great game in hand. Still, in a world of mega blockbusters, we have now come to the conclusion that the team needed additional time to realize the game's full potential."
Delays, always a good sign for a video game.
Was it Shigeru Miyamoto? This may be apocryphal. I may be attributing it to the wrong person, but a delay lasts a couple of months. A bad game lasts forever. And yeah, they could patch it, but I'd rather them get it right.
On the other hand, there's the mythical man month that says, you know, development time, you know, development stretches to meet fill the available time.
True. The goldfish theory of time. There's also the 4-hour work week, which says, fuck all y'all, I'm going home. Yeah. God, I hate that book so much.
And I had someone trying to lecture me on the virtues of, now he's got a book out called the 4-hour workout. Or something like that. Or, or the 4-minute workout or something like that.
Yeah, that doesn't work at all.
Yeah, no.
Like, at most, you could do HIIT.
I was going to say, neither does the person who reads that book and follows it.
Yeah. But Watch Dogs no longer coming out around the launch window. And I got to say, I'm kind of reevaluating my pre-order of my PlayStation 4 at this point.
Yeah. Right? Well, there's another game that got delayed.
Another Ubisoft one.
One of the other big or launch-esque ones.
Okay, I was going to say Ubisoft also delayed the Crew. It's like a racing game.
Yeah. That should look kind of good as far as arcadey racing games go. I don't know. I mean, like, Watch Dogs was going to be my big one that was like, okay, I'm going to get this, and this is going to get me, you know, I'm going to be riding the next gen. And it's like, without that, you know, there's like downloadable games, but, you know, I might actually wait until the dust settles. You know,
yeah, because it was that one and the Bungie one were the ones I was looking at, and the Bungie one's not coming out for a while ever. I mean, that's all
not coming, right? Yeah. Are you talking about like what is that, Titanfall? No, that's a different thing. Maybe I forget.
Was that Destiny?
Oh yeah, Destiny. That one's not for a little while either.
That one was always coming out slightly after Christmas, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure. I know Titanfall was Xbox One exclusive, but like beyond that,
NPC.
Xbox
One and PC.
Yeah,
You've still got your Assassin's Creed 4. You're an Assassin's Creed man, right?
Yeah, but I haven't really played 3 yet, and
still got your Mad Max.
The only other game that I can think of that like I would really want to play that's coming out on the PlayStation 4 in that window would be Outlast. But, you know, that's coming out on PC, and I'm probably going to be getting a new computer here soon. Yeah, I said it, David. Don't worry. just cool your jets, man.
Dude. Two words and one number. Change your mind.
What do you mean? Why?
Just Dance 2014.
Okay, cool. Why?
Sarcasm, that's why.
Oh, okay. I was curious if there was something I... Was that a slide whistle? Yeah. But
I'm looking at the list here, and, you know, there's Drive Club. We mentioned Assassin's Creed, but that's kind of all the platforms.
And I wouldn't do some bullshit like buy the Xbox 360 version of Assassin's Creed 4. I'd like to play it, you know, on the, you know, full the full version of it. So
is it this maybe bleeds into I had a different news story, but is it worrying that so many of the Xbox One games are already coming on two discs?
Maybe.
I think it's Battlefield 4 is going to have a two discs, and then there's also a mandatory install at the beginning. And
like the Xbox One's on Blu-rays now, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, I think it is. Like that was a big deal, but a quiet big deal.
Maybe I have this wrong, but I feel like I've kept on happening on news articles that say like, oh, hey, this game is going to take a huge install on Xbox One, or this game is going to come on two discs. Maybe it's just still 360 and PlayStation 3 stuff, but
possibly. I don't know. I mean, like, I could see breaking it up and like, here's one disc for multiplayer, here's another disc for the regular stuff.
I thought the install, all that thing was kind of what people would decide was just sort of an inevitable.
There are plenty of games on the PS3 that have a mandatory install, you know.
Yeah, fair.
All of them.
Do they all?
Most of them have patches. I don't know about mandatory installs.
Yeah.
What do you mean by mandatory install? Like that you have to, like when you first get the game, there's an installation process before you can play it, right?
Yeah. Like it'll load a bunch of stuff off of the Blu-ray because seeking stuff off of a Blu-ray takes a really long time, and it's easier for them to put it on the hard drive.
I guess The Last of Us did that. It just didn't tell you it was doing that.
No, it was like a really long tracking shot of these spores. Right. Yeah.
And by the time you realize, like, hey, this is kind of taking a while, it's like, sucker, already got through the mandatory install.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, like, I'm reconsidering that because, like, I probably could have swung having Watch Dogs and then whatever indie stuff came out for it, but I don't know. All depends.
This is why you wait, like, 3 or 4 months after the consoles come out to choose a console.
Yep.
Just go back and watch the E3 conferences again. When you get to the end of the Sony one, your fervor will be renewed.
Yeah, well, no, like it just I bought it in a fit of it. You know, I pre-ordered it rather in a fit of exuberance.
And, on air
that,
too.
Yeah, and that exuberance has waned. You know, it's whatever. Like,
do you have any thoughts on
I was gonna say, in all fairness, it would be weirder if it hadn't waned, you know, if you were like still really excited about the PS4
like,
today.
Holy shit. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, when I buy a next generation console, it's probably gonna be the one that I get, but if there's no games, I'd be no sense having a box, right?
That's I don't know. I mean, I have no problem maintaining my irrational console or lack of console loyalty, so I mean, I don't know what's wrong with you all.
Maintaining a lack of? I don't understand.
My irrational PC loyalty.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. That's still it's still a console. It's just a console with a different name called a PC. True. Like it is a box that contains stuff that you know, put you know, display things on a screen from. But yeah.
You're also kind of biased too because you're an electrical engineer. Like the computer is kind of like your god, you know?
Yeah.
That's how you become an electrical engineer, right? You make a blood sacrifice to the computer gods.
Yep, order the engineer. That's what we do.
Was there anything from that story that I missed, Ben?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay.
It's delayed to 2014. They gave a marketing sort of reason to why it was delayed.
I mean, marketing or just... I don't think that, like, that's strikingly honest to me, actually, saying, like, hey, team needed more time. You know, there's full potential, you know? Like, just, this is a big deal. We want to get it right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see when it comes out.
Maybe.
If it's good in quality, you were right.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just in theory, like, they could just take this extra time and, you know, use whatever money's left over to go, you know, hookers and blow, right? But
I'm pretty sure that's how most game devs
Lewis
do
in the news.
Hey, Paul, look. Let's see here. Dennis, do you have a story?
I do. This is about just a game that I stumbled upon and think looks really cool. It's called Eldric.
Oh, yeah, that's roguelike, right?
No, not just a roguelike. This is, let me see if I can find it. It is a roguelike immersive sim inspired by H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay.
So, if that doesn't hit all your
buzzwords. On the Oculus Rift.
Yeah, on the Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
Yeah, which it looks really cool. It looks like something out of like that was made in Minecraft.
Yeah, like that's about Minecraft is all hell.
Yeah, which was really interesting to me because at first I was like, you know, is this like was this built on some kind of Minecraft engine or, you know, I don't know what. But you know, the idea is that you wake up with amnesia in a library, and there are 3 books that can warp you to different worlds, and the worlds are kind of randomly generated, hence the roguelike, filled with eldritch monsters, straight out of H.P. Lovecraft, and you got to sneak/fight/run your way through all of it, and try to survive. And you know, a la roguelike, if you die, you pretty much stay dead. Levels are randomly laid out, and the items you encounter, you know, are randomized as well.
Yeah.
So it looks really intriguing. The cool thing, I thought this was a really interesting mechanic, is when you kill a monster, you can loot it, but if you take the loot, the monster respawns somewhere.
Oh, okay.
So it's this really interesting risk versus reward thing of, you know, especially if it's like a difficult monster, like, holy crap, I killed it and it dropped this amazing item that could really help me. But that depleted all my resources. And if this thing finds me again, I'm screwed.
Yeah.
So, just really interesting balance of that. And at least from what I've seen, it sounds like, you know, different play styles of, you know, going in guns blazing versus sneaking around are, you know, all are fun and are rewarded in different ways. So it seems like a pretty cool game. It is coming out, looks like just for PC right now.
Coming to Mac and Linux.
Oh, it is coming to Mac and Linux?
Yeah, as of October 12th. Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Yeah, they put it up on Steam Greenlight, and it got greenlit.
Good. So. Yeah, it's coming out October 21st. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, the thing I'm looking at just says PC, but if Mac and Linux is on there as well, then great, I'll get a chance to play it.
Yeah, I'm looking at their Steam page right now, actually. Yeah. So, that's the new one. Yeah, this looks real neat. The idea of a first-person roguelike feels pretty cool. Not too crazy about the Minecraft look, but I can understand how it'd be real easy to procedurally generate stuff in that using those voxels. Yeah. So that's perfectly fine. And, you know, it does like a little corner lean there. Oh, yeah. But it's, I don't know. That's cool. They've got my $15 bucks probably whenever it comes out for Mac.
Yeah, so people should know about cool stuff. And hey, that's a cool stuff.
Cool. Good catch, Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. David, how about you?
I've got something really minor and apparently very speculative, but I guess one of the Xbox execs has suggested that maybe we're thinking about someday possibly Xbox One and PC doing sort of a, I guess, dual ownership type deal.
Oh, like the crossplay multiplayer or something more, like where if you buy it on Xbox Live?
I'm not sure. You know, I initially, my reading of it was, I'd have to find it again, like a thing where if you bought it on one, you know, you could play it on either. Okay. Which would be about the only thing that could cause me to get an Xbox right now.
I mean, wouldn't you just play it on your PC?
I mean, I have a console so that I tend to get consoles so that I can play with the segment of my friends that either only have consoles or those games that play better on consoles.
Ben is like, oh my god, David's endorsing consoles. This NyQuil's really hitting me hard.
I just assumed I was hearing things.
No, like, action games, stuff like that. I also like Gears of War. I think it's interesting. If it just means crossplay, that I'd especially be all about that because, I know.
More people to play with?
More people to play with.
Didn't they try that with Shadowrun and it just failed miserably?
Yeah, the problem is that the only way for a first person shooter, the only way to not make controllers really, really at a disadvantage is to really, really dumb down the gameplay. So I forget the details, but Shadowrun apparently just ended up being like crazy, crazy auto aim focused.
Yeah, like there's a lot of mouse acceleration when there oughtn't to have been. But that didn't stop people from complaining about the fragmentation, like the class of haves versus have nots.
I know. That was actually one of the more disappointed games I've ever had, actually, because that looked like a really cool idea for a game, but it was not.
Huh. I don't know. That could be cool, maybe. But hot on the heels of them shutting down games for Windows Live, though, that kind of seems like it would be a weird decision for them to make strategically.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the big thing would be, can they manage to make a Windows platform gateway, for lack of a better word, that doesn't suck?
I mean, it really just depends on the developers that support it, just like anything, you know?
Well, I mean, more just like people hated games for Windows Live because it was annoying and didn't work well. The same way people hate Origin and...
anything non-Steam.
Yeah, anything that's not Steam, or actually Ubisoft's is pretty good.
Oh, Uplay?
Yeah, yeah. It's not great, but it's pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it just makes sense to open stuff up to cross-platform play. That seems, you know, again, just to make a lot of sense to me. But cross-ownership, cool. I get to run this thing on two different machines that I own. Like, that's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. My take on it was, potentially as trying to kind of mitigate some of the Valve thing, maybe. The idea being, you can't really there's certain games you can't really play on console because they're mouse centric.
Yeah.
So maybe trying to capture some of that market.
In kind of a weird aside to that, did you guys see the demo video of somebody showing off the Steam controller, like actually showing what gameplay looked like with it?
No.
How was it?
It looked cool. Like, a lot of it made just like a tremendous amount of sense to me. I'll put it in the show notes. I don't know if I can drag it up for our purposes here, or if us watching it on the air would make for good radio, but. But it looked neat. Like, there was some stuff about like using both thumbs on the mouse for like fine movement, like in Papers, Please. So like combining the acceleration between the two of them, and kind of like again underlining that it's not so much that you are like pushing. I've used acceleration like 5 times in the past, couple of, but you're not like, suggesting where the cursor should go. You're actually, it's a roughly 1-to-1, correlation with how you move your thumbs. Mm.
For show.
For show. Ben, did you have a backup story for the one stole from you? Oh, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, snake your story.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
The grind. Now it's time for the grind, where we talk about games that we have been playing, and hopefully enjoying, because enjoying things is fun. Does anybody want to volunteer something?
I can go first. Yeah, I have a little thing. I don't think I mentioned this last week, but I beat Grand Theft Auto 5.
I was going to ask that. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's in the bag.
So 100% it.
That's the next goal, I guess. Maybe. We'll see. We'll see how far I make it. But there are some interesting bonus material that they have hidden in the game. So I think I will continue pursuing that and go from there.
Neat. So, like, on the balance, as a whole, at least having done the main storyline, what are your broad level impressions, compared to the rest of the series? I know that you're a San Andreas fiend. And, especially because of the almost direct comparison between the two and the setting, et cetera. How does it come out in the balance?
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as Grand Theft Auto games go, like, 4 was really great, but it didn't really age well. If you played it, especially after Vice City came out, it's like in San Andreas.
Three was good, but it didn't age well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Cool. Grand Theft Auto 3. Mm. Sorry. Vice City, San Andreas, I thought aged better, and they had a stronger narrative to each of their respective games, so that kind of helped it out. So I would say that this game is better than 4. And it's somewhere along the lines of Vice City and San Andreas.
Okay.
I would say it's just as good. That said, I mean, the narrative, there are parts that are very good. It might not be as solid as something like The Last of Us. But
that's a tall order.
Yeah, I know. I guess so. It's the game that I guess it's elbowing to compete with Game of the Year. So I guess that's why I'm comparing it. But yeah, but I mean, it definitely is like a master of technical achievement, I would say, that Grand Theft Auto is. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's worth playing and beating.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you done anything more with the multiplayer?
I don't think any more than what I talked about last week, which was I played it and that's it.
Yeah. Like you haven't played it anymore since last week?
No.
Okay. All right. Are you just waiting for the issues to get resolved, or have you just been focused on single player?
I've just been focused on single player.
Yeah.
So. Yep. Yep.
Hmm.
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but I did a triathlon in the game that was 30 actual minutes of me pressing X on a controller.
Holy shit, that sounds pointless.
Yeah.
Well, why'd you do that?
And now
it was like me playing Skyrim, where I just hated myself the entire time. Like, hey, why are you doing this? But I did it anyway.
No. So wait, was pressing X as in, like, to run, or...?
That's the control that you press for all three parts of the triathlon.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wait, are bicycles back?
Bikes are back. Yeah, they have like road bikes and stuff.
Oh,
they have,
sweet!
They have BMX bikes and road bikes.
I love the bikes in San Andreas. I'm happy that those are a thing again.
Yeah, and they're
still
like
do super bunny hop.
You can hop a little bit, not as extreme as you could in San Andreas.
Oh, hopping over cars was awesome.
You could bunny hop like 8 or 10 feet. It was ridiculous. You could bunny hop over houses, small houses. Yeah, so it's definitely not that extreme.
Hey, there kids, we've got hover bikes. Get them. Yeah.
There is a cheat code where you can do moon gravity, so you might be able to hop higher with that, but...
Huh.
Yeah,
whatever. I'm so happy that they're. I've been expressing happiness at random things here all night, but it's like that cheat codes are still the thing in Grand Theft Auto. Like, when was the last time you guys just honest to God entered a cheat code?
I typically don't do them in Grand Theft Auto, and I haven't in this one just because usually your 100% progress will be restricted if you do that.
Oh yeah, I thought that was only if you saved.
Maybe.
Huh.
There's autosave in this game, so I don't want to risk it.
Ooh, yeah, that would suck.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could turn the autosave off, but I'm not that committed.
Yeah. Oh well. Huh. But yeah, just like it's like I want an RPG and I want a helicopter. And I want a puppy so I can pet him and love him and yeah. Yeah. No, I in a spree of poor judgment, purchased both Grand Theft Auto 5 and Beyond Two Souls here recently. So
nice.
Sounds like a segue to me.
Oh, let's do that. Let's hop on the segue and lean into it. So, oh man, that is a joke for people who know how segues work. So the segue is to Beyond Two Souls, which is the new game from Quantic Dream, the guys who did Indigo Prophecy and Heavy Rain. And short answer is 13 chapters into a 21 chapter game. I really like it. It's super fun. This isn't to say that like Indigo Prophecy or to a much smaller degree, a far smaller degree, Heavy Rain. This isn't to say that it won't like those, go south, or go off the rails. But it's nice because it's really upfront with its supernatural kind of like weird twisty stuff. And so it doesn't come out of nowhere with it and really hit you by the head. Like they establish, yes, ghosts exist, deal with it. This is part of the fiction. This is going to be an awesome like sci-fi horror thriller and you're going to love it.
Didn't they do that in Indigo Prophecy?
Yeah, but like it wasn't until about like halfway through.
I thought they started off
with occult imagery, but you had no idea if he was crazy or not.
Okay.
Indigo Prophecy started out with the tone that Heavy Rain maintained, throughout its entire run, which was, this is a mystery thriller, right?
I was going to say bearded, but okay.
Bearded. Suspect is hatless. I repeat, hatless. But so far I feel like this is kind of fulfilling on the promise of kind of like what they have been attempting to do, And, you know, for people of a certain persuasion who like narrative, you know, driven games and aren't too perturbed by, you know, a relative lack of interactivity and, you know, kind of like adventure games and things, you have to, you know, in theory, like what Quantic Dream is kind of aiming for, which is this, you know, using games as explicitly a storytelling medium and, putting the story at the forefront, except now they kind of have, I think, the budget and also the restraint to make better decisions with it. So it's not as poorly edited as Indigo Prophecy is. And it is much, much better acted than Heavy Rain was, like leagues.
Because they have better actors,
yeah, or they have Americans
much better acted,
yeah,
yeah. or active,
yeah, acted. It's far more interactive as well, but it's much better acted. I mean, it's a little inconsistent here and there. Some NPCs pop up where it's just kind of like, oh, that's just somebody they grabbed. Especially like the kids, teenagers. They're all like all their performances are really wooden. But I think that that is only in relationship to the actual actors who they've gotten. So if it's if obviously the main characters, Ellen Page playing the main character Jody, and Willem Dafoe playing her father figure, the scientist. Nathan, both of them, fantastic.
I was going to say, does the scientist have a name, or is that what he's called in the credits?
Yeah, Nathan, he's the scientist. Yeah. Both of them, fantastic. Like, and the game is all about Jody and this entity that is kind of bound to her. And, you know, like, I care about her. Like, you're like, you know, aside from some real groany lines that are spread throughout, like, not all of the writing is really that great, honestly. But if you look at it in the broad strokes, it's really effective, the way that they're telling the story. But when you look at where they kind of cheaped out on the actor or kind of like, oh, he's not going to be on here, they still make a bad impression on some of those. But, if it's a principal NPC, you know, somebody who an entire chapter is going to be about, their acting tends to hold up.
Can I step back for a second?
Yeah, sure.
You said that this one's better because they use actors. Like, on the previous one, did they, go Uebo style, or...?
So in Heavy Rain, I think that a big, big problem with that was they got, foreign actors, French actors, to play Americans. This was less
How
of a problem.
Even work?
Just with poor performances and weird deliveries, and
are we talking French accents though for like American
like weird pronunciations and just like very very odd line deliveries, you know, bad like t- you know intonations, just something seems off about them, right?
Jason,
or you know like not like Nam and Jaden. You know, like his one, the only performance that really holds up is Shelley, right? Like, I think he was a British actor, so that ended up being a little bit easier to convey. But it's just, you know, that you can tell that like they took some, you know, a great deal of their budget and actually focused on talent, which when you're hinging your entire game on, you know, these characters and telling their story, that is the smart way to spend your money, right? That and figuring out a good way to capture their performances. It looks fantastic.
Did they accurately convey Willem Dafoe's creepiness?
Yeah, he shows up and he's real creepy, but like he doesn't play like a real villain. You know, he's a very sympathetic character in this.
See, doesn't matter his character; he's always creepy.
Yeah, he looks like a fucking homunculus, but you know it's but yeah.
Be nice. It's an A-list actor who did a video game. I almost like am predisposed to want to really like this game and want it to do well, just so that we can set the precedent of having actors involved in the game at this level.
Sorry, I didn't know who William Dafoe is and looked him up.
Yeah, William Dafoe. Yeah, no, he has a very distinctive look. But like, you know, if you really look at the faces of a lot of people who are in movies, like they look odd. They have weird proportions. Like the body proportions and the facial proportions that work on screen look very strange in real life. He just happens to look strange on screen too, but
yeah. It's interesting faces versus necessarily
like aesthetically, yeah. You know, beautiful faces. But like people who are on television have gigantic heads. Look it up, for real. It's a real thing.
Yeah, like a ton of newscasters.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like blow pops walking around. like the Pet Boys, you know?
You're like a blow pop.
What's that from?
I forget. How national is Pet Boys? Is that a Cincinnati reference?
No, like I think it's like a Midwestern. And you know, they made reference to it in The Simpsons. They had the Zip Boys and and the Treehouse of Horror.
You know, it's big time when.
Well, yeah. We all know that the Simpsons is located, and we have no idea where it is.
Actually, they came out and said it's located in Springfield, Oregon.
Yep. Oh, they actually committed.
Yep.
Yep.
Ah. Yep. Or at least Matt Groening has come out and like admitted like where
Inspired by a lot of stuff in Portland, right?
Yeah, a bunch of the character names come from streets in Portland. Mm-hmm. There's like a Terwilliger Street and stuff. Mm-hmm. They also have a street that's spelled couch but pronounced cooch.
Yep.
Which is funny.
But they let people pass with that calling that one couch.
Maybe it's kind of like when people come here and they call it Reading Road. Like, no, I'm sorry, it's Reading.
My GPS still manages to call it Reading Road, which kind of entertains me.
Oh. Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, that's kind of the technical stuff. It looks amazing. Like the skin textures are great. They managed to animate them and texture them in such a way that they don't look like animated corpses. They very neatly avoid the uncanny valley, which is the benefit of being towards the end of a console cycle, right?
So wait, would you say they are on the other side of uncanny valley though, or are they like, you know, stylized in any way?
They're on the other side. I would say they, you know, I generally don't value photorealism. Except in this case, it does serve a purpose, kind of like in L.A. Noir, where the nuances of the performance really have to come through, and that level of detail helps sell them.
Yeah. You know? Although, considering this game's subject matter, wouldn't it be better to say they're on the other side?
Yeah. So let's talk about the story and talk a little bit about kind of the mechanic. So yeah. I kind of liken this. So it's like Heavy Rain meets PsyOps meets Ghost Trick. Ghost Trick being that game, that the Japanese adventure visual novel game where you are the ghost who can possess different objects in order to solve puzzles. So okay. Jody is this girl who, from the time she was born, she's had this entity who she calls Aiden. God, I hate Aiden names, but at least they don't pronounce it Aiden. It's Aiden. I'm sorry if anybody listening has family who has Aiden names.
To Jaden, Graydon, Schmaden,
Faden. Zayden, Quaden. Yeah, Baden. Yeah, we can just go through the entire list.
Braden.
Yeah, sorry, Brayton. It's close enough. It's close enough for Jazz. But yeah, like that's the name of this thing. It doesn't speak. It doesn't have any real characterization at all, except that it is. That's a weird siren noise. Sorry, I don't know if that's being picked up. Doesn't have any characterization.
That's Aiden. He's mad that you're mispronouncing his name.
Yeah. Oh no, spirits are angry. no. So like you know. I want to say Ellen, Jody talks to Aiden saying, you know, like, hey, stop this kind of thing. But really Aiden is you as the character who's, you know, who's attached to her. You know, all throughout her life, she's been studied and different and singled out and all this stuff because she apparently has these psychic powers, but she had, you know, really what it is because she has this ghost who is linked to her that, you know, she can talk to and see through. It can, you know, act on objects. So you know, so to control Aiden, you press triangle pretty much at any time, and you go into first person mode, kind of like the clairvoyance mode in PsyOps. Mm-hmm. And objects that you can interact with, much like objects in the real world, have little dots on them. Not in the real world, the game's real world have little dots on them. You press a trigger, and then there are different gestures that you do with the sticks in order to do that, in order to manipulate them. So if you want to like poltergeist an item and like throw it, you know, like jostle it or turn on a radio or whatever, you pull both sticks back and then release them. And it gives you cues of what to do. If you want to like strangle a person, you, there's combat situations where that happens. Yeah. You know, you target, the person and then, you know, like drag, both of the sticks inward. If you want to possess a person, you drag both sticks. Yeah. Force stroke. There we go. And then there's some other stuff like you can redirect the flow of energy, from like recently dead things in order to see how they died. directing it from the thing to Jody's head. And then there's a bunch of stuff where that comes out.
Wait. So you can basically directly PTSD her.
Kind of, yeah. But like it gives clues about the environment, and it makes it a little bit like, you know, into an investigative kind of thing.
It's like the bloodstain in Dark Souls.
Kind of, yeah. And this is used in a lot of like really cool ways where, you know, there's a little bit of puzzle solving. I would never say that any of them are especially difficult, but it is a layer above and beyond what you would expect from Indigo Prophecy and Heavy Rain. But just the fact that you can dip into this completely other mode of play is incredibly effective at making you feel engaged with the world and kind of like making you think of other ways to go about this. And because it's like Heavy Rain, there are multiple paths that anything can take. And she will say like, okay, you know, like help me out or go get this. I don't want to spoil too much, but there's like one especially effective early scene where she's taken to a party, like, you know, Willem Dafoe's character, takes her, she's a teenager, and it's kind of like, hey, you know, it's, you know, you need to socialize, you know, this will be good for you. And it's like a teenage party and like the parents are away, they pull out the beer and everything.
Great Carrie?
Because Willem Dafoe knows where all the hip kids parties are.
Yeah, well, it's a coworker's daughter's birthday party, right? And so, and kind of the Carrie thing, like they start like picking on her, they call her a witch, and they throw her underneath the staircase and lock her in. And this is one of the she hasn't really learned how to control Aiden yet, so she's like, "Help me, you know, help me," and then just goes in, and you as Aiden start doing. Okay, so you have an option. You open up the door, and then it's either get revenge or leave. You can just leave, and that changes some of the chapters that happen afterwards, I assume. But you can then go into the other room and straight up, like, Beetlejuice them. You know, nice. Like, actually, like, you know, all these different environments, and you have to freak them out. And, you know, like certain moments in, say, other... adventure games that we talk about a great deal. I don't want to spoil anything. Sorry. You can go too far and like, you know, you can just give them a little scare, but because you get into it, you're just kind of like, oh man, I want to see more of this. Like it quickly gets out of hand. Like, and so
cut off all their digits,
or you just like shatter glass and they're like all cut up and everything. And that changes a little bit of how it goes. And
so are there, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's, I continue.
I was going to ask, are there fail conditions, or is it like Heavy Rain where no matter what, pretty much you keep on going?
So I haven't failed anything yet. There was a situation where I can't tell if I was intended to die or not. I know that there were like some news stories, which I definitely avoided, that said you can die, but there's, you know, no like continue screen or anything like that. I think that they wrote it in such a way that the story is malleable, and because of the supernatural thing, yeah, there's a reason. Yeah, good.
Not gonna lie, I'm really hoping that the plot twist is, oh, you have superpowers because you're in a video game, and they just completely break the fourth wall Max Payne style.
Oh man, maybe. I don't know that I would. I don't know that I would dig that too much.
I know. I would.
It'd probably be a big shift in tone, I imagine.
Yeah, probably. I couldn't see them doing it. Who knows?
Well, I mean, David Cage said he wanted to kind of genre hop with all of this. So, you know, there's got to be a comedy section. It's got to be some
slapstick.
Yeah.
Slapstick with a poltergeist. I could see that working.
You try, but your hand just goes right through.
Yeah. And they do a bunch of stuff with that. It gets genuinely terrifying in like a bunch of the spots. I didn't expect it to be a horror game, but it totally is.
Huh.
Like, you know, even with the whole ghostly, you know, kind of thing. I haven't gotten to too much of the stuff where she's a CIA operative working in the Middle East. That I think is being saved for the climax.
That's part of it.
Yeah. That was in
like the commercial for it.
Yeah, it's in the commercials. Like, you know, like the government uses her for her powers. Yeah,
as you do.
Yeah. As is happening to all of us with our various powers. it plays out like an X-Men game or something. Like, I don't know. It's got like this kind of like comic book kind of vibe to it, in the way that it's a little bit serious, but some of it's kind of tongue in cheek. It's real genuine and sincere in a lot of places too, and sincere, not insincere. In a lot of places, it's incredibly effective, very affecting. The story is told in a nonlinear way, which monkeys with the pacing just a little bit. Just because you'll have, you know, something where she's an adult and it's action packed and you're doing all this kind of crazy stuff. And then it goes back to, you know, her being a little kid and, you know, like there are echoes and resonances and just kind of like, oh, I understand why they juxtapose that. So I wouldn't say it's, you know, especially well or especially poorly paced. I would say it's very deliberately paced, which is not a bad thing when you're talking about, something that is narrative, you know?
Yeah, I'm okay with it being a little melodramatic or overreaching as long as it was intentional about it.
Yeah, if that
makes any sense.
Yeah, and again, aside from a couple of groaner lines that are delivered in kind of a groany way by bronies. Bronies.
Whoa, plot twist, man.
Yeah. the entire cast this whole time has been bronies. But
Willem Dafoe is like, see, not the weirdest one here.
It drops the mic. Yeah. But yeah.
Now I'm going to go to a kid's party. See y'all.
Cole, he's got your jet ski.
Damn it, Willem! For the last time, open fire. He takes that crazy
platoon
pose.
Guess that's what we get for making fun of him.
Yeah, I suppose. Dude was in platoon, like he's unassailable. He was also in Boondock Saints. Boo!
Oh, so good.
Yeah, I think that's just about everything I have to say about it. I have about a third of the game left to go. But I'm very bullish on it so far. I think, you know, I can definitely understand somebody being hesitant about playing it, especially if they've only played Indigo Prophecy. But I can't see dismissing it out of hand, especially if it, you know, just like in light of the positive things that are, you know, said about it. I don't, you know, like it's upfront with its extravagancies. It establishes its rules in a way that is not disingenuous, and it sticks to them in a way that at least so far is very consistent.
So I think the big question is how much is, what's the price point? How much is this game worth? Should somebody get it at $60 or should they wait till 40?
I mean, you know, I won't begrudge anybody their price tolerances, right? I bought it at 60 because it's worth 60 to me. These narrative experiences and just, you know, I've bought games with a smaller runtime, you know, and weirder premises for full price because I, you know, I want to vote with my dollars and in that regard. However, you know, I would say $40 and it's not even like that it's a runtime thing on how long to beat. It's clocking in at like 12 hours. Which is,
you know, pretty standard.
Yeah, for a single player narrative game, like that's about what you're looking at, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like the 12 to 15 hour range is about standard. I would say so. I don't know. Like I wouldn't, you know, blame anybody for waiting until it's $40. It's going to be the same game at that price point later on, but I wanted to experience it firsthand as soon as possible.
Just do not buy this game at $43.
Oh no, God help you.
God help
What's you. What's it? One of my favorite Norm Macdonald like Saturday Night Live weekend update kind of things, like talking about, you know, new research out from the USDA. You know, Special K with one cup of milk is a delicious addition to any breakfast, and it's also nutritious. Special K with a cup and a half of milk, deadly poison.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that has been SNL Bits with Cole Ross on the level.
B-I-T-Z.
Oh.
Bits.
SNL Bits. Oh man, Dennis, you ignorant slut. Yeah. So
I think that's my cue to go next, right?
Maybe. Do you guys have any other questions about this? I feel like I've kind of monologued about it. Is there anything that I explained poorly that the listeners would benefit from extra extrapolation on?
No, I mean, it's great to see a game that does something truly different and interesting. And I think we talked about last week that that forgives all kinds of flaws. So,
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to see that kind of thing out there.
Yeah.
And I'll be interested. Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, and everybody who's listening, who's like, just wait for, I'm prepared to, you know, I'm keeping an open mind. I'm not going to hate it now for the potential that it could go bad later. You know, I like to enjoy things. And, you know, 2/3 of a good game is still, you know, in this case, 9 hours of good experience, right?
Yeah. I'll be curious to see if it does the whole...
Wait a second.
Eight hours of good experience, sorry.
Of course, math major. Marketing
I'm
major.
I'm sleepy, but not that sleepy.
Yeah, how are you feeling, Ben?
I'm getting there.
Yeah, get in. Okay.
Do another shot.
Shot.
I interrupted you, Dennis. I'm sorry.
Continue. Oh, I was just going to say that it'll be interesting to see if it does the whole chapter dilation thing. I think that it's kind of a trope in video games that, you know, like the first couple of chapters or sections or whatever of the game are really long and meaty. And then it's like the final six chapters are all about 30 seconds long each.
They've spaced. they've spaced out actually the long chapters and the short chapters. Huh. So some of them are only like, you know, 5-10 minutes long. Other ones are a half hour. Before I hopped on the line tonight, I had a couple of meetings from work fall through, so I actually enjoyed a little bit of an evening while I ate some dinner.
Yay.
And hooray! I played one that was about like an hour and a half long. So
oh okay wow
yeah. So very yeah. Cool. But yeah, I can see them, especially like as we get into probably more of like why Jodie's on the run. It starts out with her being on the run from the law. As it gets into like why she is where she is right now, as opposed to, you know, the origin story stuff, it'll probably breathe a little bit more. But
nice.
But yeah, they've already been varying the lengths, which I think is important, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Anybody else before we move on to Dennis?
Mm-mm.
Nope. Okay. Cool. Dennis, what you been playing? I'm sorry. What you been grinding on? I don't know.
What's
I've been? I slipped into old habits.
Yeah. So I finished Limbo, which was great. Very satisfying end to the game. And I was very happy with the way the not necessarily difficulty, but yeah, I guess difficulty of the puzzles ramped up throughout the game.
Yeah.
I feel like they just did a great job of constantly presenting you with a situation, and it's what a good puzzle is supposed to do. Is you look at it and you go, well, that's impossible. And then as you monkey around with it, you kind of get closer and closer until click, I understand what to do, and you're able to break through. So I felt like it gave that loop of gameplay very consistently throughout, and I was never stuck in one place too long.
Yeah.
So that was good. I can't remember. I think I had beat it last week, but I can't remember if I talked about it. I finished Demon's Souls.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes. This is for the first time, so you powered through 5-2.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I actually didn't have much trouble with it at all.
Really?
Yeah. No, I think I died once, and that was just a stupid mistake, and it was after I'd put down the shortcut, so...
Oh, yeah. Wow. So you made the whole run, essentially, in one go.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, even with your big clubby smashy dude against the defiled ones?
Against the what?
Against the defiled ones or whatever, the gigantic guys?
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. I made it through, and I think... Honestly, I'm really glad that I played the game the way I did, because I guess I played it on my own equivalent of easy mode. Mm-hmm. So I kind of played with the wiki in hand, and I, you know, kind of figured out ahead of time the very specific build that I was going to go towards, and you know, just kind of went into every situation kind of knowing what to expect. You know, so if there was a boss that I kind of cheese, or I think the man eater you can shoot with arrows through the fog wall, you know, I would do that, or at least to soften them up. And just kind of in general, anything that was difficult about the game, I would just go and look for the easy way around it.
Yeah. That's entirely unlike you, but I think that it's perfectly rational,
right?
Behavior.
So, which is, you know, I'm Mr. Hard Mode, and that was actually a really enjoyable experience. Like, the game stayed a ton of fun. It stayed challenging throughout. I still, you know, left myself enough room that I got that true Souls game experience of kind of cowering about what's around the next corner and always being worried. But again, I didn't take that so seriously that I allowed myself to get frustrated.
Yeah. You weren't like watching Let's Plays and saying like, oh, that, you know, there are five of these guys here, there are four of these guys here.
Exactly. I feel like that was a great way to play through it. Definitely my experience with Dark Souls helped. They kind of gave me a base level of skills that translated very well. I also used archery prolifically for the first time ever.
Yeah.
I've always just kind of ignored it. And this time I kind of went whole hog. Not an archery only run, but just wherever I could use arrows, I did.
Did you end up using the lava bow? Sorry, we're talking Demon Soul shop.
No, I actually, because I'm an idiot, and I ate that soul before I realized what it was good. So I wound up with a quality longbow, which served me just fine. That's how I kind of beat the final boss, and it was perfectly fine. Patches was my best friend, sold me a ton of arrows. So I sunk a lot of souls into arrows. I think that's why I ignored it in the past, is I always felt like I was, you know, paying for something that was a you know, that I was going to expend, whereas I could invest those souls instead into, you know, levels that would stick with me forever. So, worth the investment. I have to say, having now finished both the Souls games, both of the end bosses, and when I say that for Demon Souls, I won't spoil anything about end bosses, except to say that they are both incredibly satisfying.
Oh yeah,
and they both deliver exactly what I want. And fortunately, I think this is two freak accents, but the killing blow, if you will, for both of the boss fights was just this incredible cinematic moment in both cases. So with Demon Souls, I played with the giant great axe, which is just this huge smashing weapon, and it has a rolling attack, but it's really not good for anything. And I was playing a high poise character and just kind of tanked my way through everything, never really used rolling to dodge. And the killing blow in that boss fight was me dodge rolling and using the attack that I never used to get him. In Demon Souls, the final boss had this, you know, really powerful kind of jumping forward attack would take away a lot of your health. And I shot him with the final arrow as he was flying through the air towards me with that attack.
Gosh.
And it was just you could not have filmed it any better if you were making a movie. Just him midair, arm back, about to bring the sword down, and me just firing the arrow into him. So just, man, good boss fights. So that's that game.
Yeah.
If you liked that, go listen to Bonfireside Chat.
Yes, right here on duckfeed.tv.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to see about getting you on there. That's been an oversight.
Yeah. I don't know. You probably have your Demon Souls lineup all done. And
not as thoroughly as you would think. So,
I'm open. I don't know that I have a preference for any of the areas. So
okay, I'll let you know what's up.
Yeah. Use me as a backup.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then the main game that I've been playing this week, has been, I kind of mentioned it last week, but, Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. Which first off is the most superfluous, subtitle ever.
Yeah. Rising.
Yeah. Rising.
Origins.
Origins.
I lifted that joke from like 17 other podcasts.
But yeah, it's a truism. It's funny you say Origins, because this game actually reminds me a lot of Dragon Age Origins. It plays significantly faster, just in terms of your move set in the combat, and you don't have a party. But aesthetically, it's very similar to Dragon Age Origins, and kind of the RPG-ness of it is in the same area as Dragon Age.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, you know, it's your typical RPG story where you wake up with amnesia on a pile of bodies, find out that you've been resurrected from death, and, you know, in this world where everyone kind of has a predetermined fate, your fate is gone because mm-hmm. you've been resurrected, and you're the one agent in this world that can truly, truly change things.
Yeah.
And so you set off to
by Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's actually got a very MMO feel to it. Like, if there were, you know, a bunch of other players running around in the same world with me, I think it would feel very at home. And I don't know if at one point they had ambitions of kind of taking this IP and spinning it into an MMO.
Oh, but they totally did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actually just sold off or are about to sell off the rights.
Yeah.
I hope it happens because it would make that transition very comfortably.
Yeah.
But for me, it's nice because, you know, I don't really have enough time to play an MMO and to have any sort of paid subscription is to put, you know, pressure on me to play it that I wouldn't want. And to have, you know, a free to play is me, you know, feeling like I'm not getting the full experience. So this is kind of my way to get an MMO experience without the MMO part.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. The game, I was thinking about this before we got on the line. The game, I couldn't pin down any one thing that the game does unique. Like there's no like here's the gimmick for you, you know, but it just does everything pretty well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, competency isn't a bad thing.
Yeah,
it's just
it's
damnation it's, by faint praise to call something competent.
Yeah, and it's really yeah, and I don't want it to sound like that. It's if you hit a point where you're like, hey, I kind of feel like playing an MMO style RPG for a while. This is your game, and it's gonna scratch that itch really well. And there are some things that it does really well. It's just, you know, nothing super unique.
Chakra the closest, fun.
What's that?
Chakra crazy fun.
Chakra. Oh, the weapons. Yeah, actually that's the disc weapons, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I haven't messed with those. I've done a little bit of staffs. I did a little bit of daggers and then I did long swords and great swords and I'm on great swords now. But the combat is very simple. It's just, you know, hit square for your primary, hit triangle for your secondary. Mm-hmm. But they give it a good level of depth at the same time. So the weapons all play meaningfully different. So if you got a pair of daggers, you can kind of go in and mash square and you're fast enough to get hits in, you know, before your enemy can. If you're going to play with a greatsword that's got a little bit more of a wind-up, you're probably going to want to hide behind your shield for a bit and kind of take that first volley before you kind of answer. And so, you know, you kind of have to think about that as you're playing. I've focused on greatswords and on arrows. And it does, you know, you've got your standard attack, and then you can attack from a blocking position to get a different set of moves. And then I haven't gotten these abilities yet, but you can also attack from a roll and attack from a parry for even then additional moves.
Yeah.
So it's all one button, but it's all contextual for how the attacks work, which is great because similar to Demon Souls in Dark Souls buzzwords, you know, you really have to kind of know your weapon's moveset and know your surroundings, and then choose the best from your you know. From what's available to you for the situation. The one place that the AI really, really shines, and I would say the combat really, really shines, is when you're surrounded by a group of different enemies.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got a bunch of archers and a couple, you know, rogues around you, or if you've got, you know, one big troll and a bunch of little boggarts running around him, the AI handles that really well, and that each of your enemies will play their role, and you really have to, you know, take that into account. So my favorite is wolves, where if you get attacked by a pack of wolves, they'll do kind of what wolves do. They'll all encircle you and then kind of run at you one at a time. And like an idiot, you know, I just kind of try to slash at whoever was running at me, but by the time I saw who it was, they had already taken their hit and gone past, and the next one was making a pass on me. So just create, you know, one-on-one, it's pretty much mash square until thing dead.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have groups of enemies, then the combat gets much more interesting.
Is there magic that's kind of thrown in? Cause like, it sounds like it's unlike MMOs in that, it doesn't like depend on recharge times for, you know, basic attacks.
Yeah, not a lot of recharge time kind of attacks. You do have a pool of mana, and kind of your special moves, or abilities are all mapped to a button. Again, similar to Dragon Age Origins. So those are all, no matter what kind of skill tree you are doing, you will get kind of magic abilities. So obviously the sorcerer one has more overtly, you know, magic abilities. But your rogue and your brawler skill trees also have stuff. So, for example, the brawler has a magic ability where it's kind of you slam the ground and create an earthquake, yeah. That sort of stuff.
Okay.
So those are an additional wrinkle that you can add to combat that fits in pretty well. There are several of the abilities that are complete garbage, though. You know, I kind of invested a couple skill points in them before I realized, oh, these are complete garbage. But I was pleasantly surprised by how easy it is to just go in and completely respec your character.
Yeah.
So, you know, the kind of, and it plays in with this idea that your character truly doesn't have a fate. So he can kind of, you know, for a small fee, just completely rewrite his fate and who he is.
Yeah.
Excuse me. So that was really nice because that gave me the freedom to like, oh, I wonder what this skill is. I'll put in a couple points to it. I'll mess around with it. Oh, I don't like that. I can get rid of it, which was really nice. The other kind of subsystem that is good is the crafting system. So instead of selling weapons that you don't want, you can break them down at a forge to get component parts and then use those component parts to build new weapons. And then with some weapons have gem sockets that you can create gems for and then kind of plug in different, stat bonuses and everything like that. And my favorite thing is that once you create it, you can name the weapon.
Oh, yeah.
Which is kind of fun.
I'm trying to think of another game that does that.
Yeah, I mean, the crafting system is not significantly different than what I've seen in, say, like a City of Heroes or you know, stuff like that. But I've never seen you able to name stuff, which I've had fun with. So, you know, I created some armor, some leg armor that gave you experience boosts, so you'd earn experience faster. Yeah. And I called them my Smarty Pants.
Wow. You know what? You can do that in the Elder Scrolls games.
Have
Smarty Pants.
Yeah. Yeah, but so it has its pockets or bags of holding, but it can only hold Smarties candies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that system is good, and it especially with the types of bonuses you can get. I just created a sword, or rather found a sword that had gem sockets, and so I put gems into it. So I didn't get to name this one. But the gems one gave me, you know, electricity damage, which was pretty standard, but then the other one gave me plus, a fifth of my damage at night. So like bust the sword at night and it's like super powerful, which is just like, it's, you know, crazy weird that is a combination that they thought to put into the game.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool and fun. Again, probably
so I
not.
I just had this image of like you hit someone. But, like, most of the damage doesn't actually get dealt till night. And they just walking around, and all of a sudden, like, splits in half.
It's like the five-finger death punch or whatever, where you don't die until you get up to walk away.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me think here. Can you describe kind of the quests for me? Like, is it the usual MMO fare of, you know, go to the temple of so-and-so and kill 10 of so-and-so? Or is it is a little bit more varied than that?
They've done a good job of avoiding the pure kill X of Y quests. That said, there's still all your standard fetch quests and find six of this, you know, quest. So nothing that I've seen has been super innovative. Most of the main storyline quests, you go into some sort of special dungeon, to. Instanced, I guess you'd call it, except for there's only one instance in the entire game, which is you, since it's single player.
It's the instance that it's created when you turn on the system, and it goes away when you turn the system off, oddly enough. Yeah. It's a crazy world we live in.
Yeah. The most memorable quest is I had to help a wolf that got turned into a human and was angry about it get turned back into a wolf, which was a nice little inversion of like, well, hey, I'm a human now, but it's not this cool, exciting thing. I'm really kind of pissed about it, and I wish I was a wolf again. So that was interesting. I've tried to avoid side quests just because I kind of want to stay on the critical path. Mm-hmm. This will be, you know, a 40-hour game for me versus an 80-hour game, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's been really, really tough. Like, okay, I'm going to be really focused. I need to go see this guy for the main quest. And then 6 hours later, I just finished help some woman, you know, get her cat out of the tree for a meager amount of experience. It's just this compulsion. So now I'm getting better about it, but I still go and get all of the side quests, even if I don't complete them.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of them. There's a lot to do in this game, which is good. But a negative would be that the world all just looks kind of the same. It's all this, you know, fairyland, green pastures. And that said, you know, I'm probably still earlier in the game, but
it's kind of funny that you say that it looks like Dragon Age Origins, because when I think of Dragon Age, it's not like Lowell Brown, like everybody says, but it's a real muted kind of color palette, you know.
I guess, yeah, a little aesthetically realistic.
Yeah. And like all the stuff that I've seen of Kingdoms of Amalur, makes it look closer to like a fable in terms of its like the breadth of colors that it uses.
Yeah, but it's all like that green garden stuff so far. Oh, yeah. So we'll see if I get to the sulfur pits or whatever. But that's been okay.
the sulfur pits.
Yeah. The sulfur pits with you.
I assume there's sulfur pits somewhere in the game.
I want to step back. Is there actually a mission to help a little old lady save a cat?
No.
Okay, because when your only verb is longsword and chakram, that could get kind of interesting.
Yeah, no, the stupidest thing that I've done so far is there's apparently some dude who had a collection of lewd books that somehow got distributed, and he wants me to find them and return them to his collection. So that's interesting.
As you do.
Yeah. Everything in the game is voice acted, and there is a ton of lore, which means I am skipping a ton of voice acting, and I feel really bad about that. But at the same time, it would probably double the length of the game if I just sat and listened to what everyone said instead of reading it and skipping forward.
Nobody has time for that.
Yeah. Which is sad, because it's like, you know, if everything wasn't voice acted, I feel like people would complain, and yet, you know, no one's actually going to listen to all of it, especially when every character has like 16 questions you can ask them that are just purely lore. And I can't imagine anyone sitting through it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, dialogue trees tend to be fun, but
yeah, but at a certain point you just kind of read. Okay. Got it. Skip. Read. Okay. Got it. Skip.
Yep.
And while there's a lot of lore, I wouldn't say it's been too quality. The voice acting is passable, but the content is
yeah. Yeah. Like,
so yeah.
Whereas I don't know if I would have enjoyed Dragon Age nearly as much if I didn't really like the world that it was set in, you know, like if I wasn't compelled to read every codex entry and stuff. I mean, I know that I have conditions, but
even I gave up on Dragon Age Origins pretty early on in terms of reading everything.
Oh yeah.
Which is bad, because occasionally they put some important stuff in there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, important context, right?
Yeah.
I remember Mass Effect had some really cool stuff in their encyclopedia thing.
Yeah, and it was also voiced, like, and the guy who read it sounded like Space Ghost.
Yeah.
Wow, that just changed my entire image of Mass Effect.
Yeah. narrated by Space Ghost. Oh, man.
It's this weird dichotomy where the less important something is to, you know, the actual plot of the game or the mission structure, the more freedom the writers had to just have fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
So you tend to stumble on the real interesting or funny or, you know, just cool stuff deep in the recesses of, you know, all the crap that you would never normally read.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's kind of funny, like, you know, that they do that in the books and on the Elder Scrolls series, to the point where, like, I made a point of collecting all of them that I found so I could take them back to my home and read them in peace. That's a huge thing in computer role playing games. I mean, look at something like Torment, where they had all kinds of, like, frankly disturbing and creepy and weird stuff that was just hidden in the corners.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I remember in Deus Ex, I really like some of the books there. The excerpts from, what is it, The Man That Was Thursday and mm-hmm. some other, I forget, something they made up.
Yeah.
Nice.
Huh. Neat. So Kingdoms of Amalur, do you see yourself finishing it?
We'll see. I'm going strong now, and it kind of really scratches that RPG itch, so... As long as it sticks around, I think this game is very, like you said earlier, competent for addressing that.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows where my whims will lead me next? I'm just such an unpredictable person. So.
Well, I mean, whatever as comes out on PSN next. Yeah. So.
Damn it, you beat me to it.
Sorry. Yep. I didn't mean to snake your punchline, man. Sorry.
I'm expanding my horizons, that or Humble Indie Bundle.
Hey, you know, it's perfectly fine. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
Cool. David, how about you?
Well, speaking of itching the MMO itch, which I'm pretty sure is a horrible disease, but
I think it's, what is it, seborrheic dermatitis? Whatever you get from sitting still for a real long time.
The MMO itch.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of that thing... I've been continuing to play just bits and pieces of Neverwinter is the main thing I've had time with.
Yeah.
The main thing I've been doing actually is the crafting system, which they use kind of a queue-based crafting system. So, you know, you queue up something to craft and, you know, it might take, you know, 10 minutes or, you know, up to, like, the longest thing I've done is, like, 18 hours, depending on what you're trying to craft.
Can you expend real money currency to speed it up with some kind of, like, forge boost?
You sort of. you have your in-between currency. Basically, the game has three main currencies. Gold is dropped, like, by enemies, and it's used for, like, very, very low level, like, you know, very generic equipment, and then just your general needs, like healing potions and stuff.
Yeah.
Astral diamonds are returned by certain, like, daily quests, and that's what you use for, like, respecking some things, and that's what you use to speed up crafting. And that's also the only thing you can use in the auction house.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zen is the actual pay currency. And you can convert between Zen and Astral Diamonds. So sort of, but not exactly.
Mm. I've always felt that the shadiness of a free-to-play MMO is directly proportional to the number of currency systems there are.
This game might be a little bit screwed because it does have, like, the three main currencies, but really it's remarkably unshady. The core gameplay you can basically do, where it starts to get a little questionable, is respecs are $6. And at the higher levels, they have this system where basically, like, enchantments you can combine... You can combine enchantments, so like four lesser enchantments become a moderate enchantment, which, you know, you work your way up to like super happy fun time enchantments or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a chance of them failing and destroying one of the enchantments you use to make it. But you can buy items using real money that ensure it will work. The big problem with that is since it's additive that way, in order to get, like, the best enchantments, you could potentially pay, like, $40.
Oy.
So that's I'm hoping that, you know, everything else is very reasonable, so I'm hoping maybe they see reason, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But with going back real quick to the crafting system, kind of their neat kind of their thing that makes it different is you're not actually crafting anything. You have a whole bunch of people that work for you that craft stuff.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So you, because of that, you can advance in any of the crafting disciplines. You don't have to choose them. And also, you know, it kind of changes. So, like, the ways you make crafting happen faster is by hiring better employees. And similarly, one of the crafting disciplines is basically running a mercenary company. And so they pretty much just straight up go out and, like, get gold and the special currencies for you.
Okay.
So it's kind of a neat system, and it kind of continues my strange love of games I don't actually have to play.
That's a weird, that is indeed a strange love.
A la Eve?
Yeah, kind of the Eve-esque thing where I'm too busy to actually play a game, but this is a game I can play for like 10 minutes every 4 hours.
Yeah.
You would love Farmville.
Yes, but I do have a soul.
Not for long. Yeah, I'm curious about that. There's no place for an MMO, but like all the things that I heard about it. So wait, correct me if I'm wrong, but is there custom like user content in this one?
Yes, there is. I've played one of the ways you get the secondary currency, or the basically, the more important currency is there's a daily quest to play one of the... They kind of have like a little plague planet. A little big planet where they have like the top games, top levels. And basically, once per day, you can play one of them to get a whole bunch of currency. Right. And the ones I've played have actually been really well put together. And they're kind of the same way Little Big Planet has like the little keywords. You can like look and be like, I want one that's combat heavy or puzzle heavy or dialogue heavy or so on.
Right.
So, they seem to be really well done from what I've seen so far.
Cool. And like well done in that you're searching for the best rated ones, right?
Say that again.
Well done, in that you are actively like looking for the best rated ones, right?
Yeah, and you know, just the ones I've seen, like I played one that was basically like the plot line was that you are searching for some like cursed armor or whatever, so you kind of, you know, travel through the catacombs and end up, you know, fighting some cult that's like, you know, built around the guy who owned the armor that was betrayed by the government. And then, you know, you end up like going and fighting him as he resurrects. And, you know, it's just really well done. It's generic fantasy stuff, most of them, but I mean, it's really well done.
Yeah. Cool. How much longer do you see yourself playing it?
I don't know. I mean, I have not been playing that much, and I'm like level 16 out of 60. So it seems like leveling happens real quick, and the core storyline's actually pretty interesting. So I'm kind of seeing myself at least trying to get through the core storyline.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I will say, though, you're fighting for, like, the new ruler of the city against the rebels. However, it does kind of annoy me because I think the rebels are kind of right. Like, the main thing I know about the king is that apparently his major decree so far has been there's been some, like, plague, and he's basically exiled everyone who comes down with the plague.
Okay.
just like, sorry about your luck. Yeah, we don't live in a world where if you leave the city, you get eaten by like giant spiders and werewolves and crap.
No. That isn't the world at all.
Yeah, that's not Faerun. Faerun's completely safe. There's no wizards or dragons or dungeons.
Oh, it's called
the Sword Coast. What do you think is out there?
I gotta hold up. Can we just stop the podcast for a second? I forgot to let out the giant spider. So.
Yeah. No. See, these things happen. They start like banging on the door and spinning webs around your loved ones and.
Yeah. All that.
then you feed it LSD and it starts doing like crazy web patterns and it's like, oh man, I'll never do drugs now.
yeah. So, little webby, we call them.
Well, yeah. Hint, nominate us for a Webby, I guess.
Yeah.
Are those still around?
Yes, they are. Like, there are websites that, like, tout that they have won a Webby.
Huh.
We call him Webby. Webby. Faster than lightning. But, yeah,
they call him Webby. Yep. Webby. Okay.
I'm yep, same joke, but sung. Sorry.
No. Oh, was that the same thing?
Yeah. I was speaking the words to Flipper.
Sweet,
it's cool. Anything else, David?
I'm getting a little bit into Kingdom of Loathing.
Even more. What is new?
Huh?
What is new?
They added a new quest that is they replaced the Trapper's Quest something where you have to light some pylons on several peaks. So one of them is just an excuse to make fun of Doctor Who and Star Trek and Twilight and Star Wars all at the same time.
As you do.
One of the peaks is apparently randomly spewing oil. And then the last peak is the Twin Peaks, which it's basically a Twin Peaks parody.
Pastiche.
And they've screwed around with my class. They've apparently redone all the skills for the Seal Clubber, which means all of a sudden I don't know what any of the skills do. So.
Yeah.
Killing things, getting meat, same as you ever did.
I was going to say, do they inhibit you from clubbing seals?
No, they pretty much encourage it, in fact.
Then you got no problems.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, I'm at the point in the game, though, where the hit seals are after me. Someone's taken out a hit on me, so I'm randomly getting attacked by hit seals.
Yeah, it's been forever since I've done a run through on Kingdom of Loathing. I really ought to.
Yeah, I know. Unfortunately, the point I'm at in the game. The next kind of higher area is the ocean floor, which is just crazy, crazy, crazy difficult. And I'm not at a guild, so I can't do any of the guild dungeons. So I'm kind of at this uncomfortable place where there's nothing really reasonably within my reach to kind of be my next goal.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate.
Have you ascended at all in this character?
Yeah, I mean, I've ascended several times, and you know, I'm going to keep ascending. Yeah, I can keep unlocking skills, but it's kind of a thing where, like, before, you know, there's a time where I was working on a number of the trophies, but I've gotten most of the trophies that are kind of within reach, and, you know, I've got all of the equipment. You know, best equipment that isn't just like millions upon millions of meat.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess, you know, that's just kind of a thing, but I'm gonna have to try to join a guild or something, I don't know.
Yeah. Huh.
But neat. Good stuff.
Cool. A lot of online stuff for David.
Multiplayer.
Wait, Ben, still with us?
Yeah, barely. I just had some coffee ice cream, so I might be feeling better, maybe.
God, coffee ice cream is the best.
Does that work like that?
Pretty sure not, but don't tell Ben that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Placebo.
Yeah, I know. Whenever I go to Grater's, I get to the mocha chip.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way to go, I think.
Chips of pure mocha.
Yes, local Cincinnati restaurants were actually Grater's is actually really good. So I don't feel bad talking shop. Come visit, have some Grater's. It's great. But yeah,
Buckeye Blitz.
Oh, hey, I had Buckeye Blitz yesterday. It was phenomenal.
Yeah, I only ever have it when my parents come to town, actually, because they love Grater's.
Mm-hmm.
As you should.
Who does
coming this weekend?
What's that?
Homecomings this weekend.
Oh yeah, that's true. We had a homecoming dance for work. It was a work party themed like a homecoming dance this past weekend.
So just crazy awkward.
It was just kind of like, hey, you know, bring somebody, and you know, so I went in a group with a bunch of other single coworkers, and just kind of like, yeah, you know, it's free booze. We'll show up, and there's dancing. They had ambush karaoke, which is kind of like, hey, you know, we'll do these dances, and then we'll pick somebody at random. Just kind of like, all right, we gotta go. And so, yeah,
they also, in keeping with the theme, have like older people that just walk around and tell you not to stand so close to each other.
Yeah, yeah, I gotta see some daylight. Leave room for Jesus. This is a public school.
put a balloon in between you.
Yeah,
gotta be able to.
Yeah, chaperones. You got
do that.
Yeah, you got chaperoned. So it's time for multiplayer. After a digression about homecoming dances, for some reason that you have as a grown adult, but. Dennis, since you posted this, why don't you introduce the question?
Sure. This was not prompted by anything except my imagination. But what is your gaming pet peeve? So what is the one common mistake that a lot of games make that is just unforgivable in your mind?
Mm-hmm. Unforgivable.
I'm going to watch Bridge Over the River Kwai. Yeah, that's a, I don't know. Do people know that video, that meme? It kind of seems like it was a while ago.
Oh, yeah. Unforgettable. What is it? Waffle fries for free?
Yeah, yeah. And gotta be free. Yeah. So I'll start us off. Murph Murphy says, jumping puzzles, in all caps with an exclamation point. And then in the next comments, he says, specifically jumping puzzles in 3D games with a static camera. I'm looking at you, Soul Reaver.
Yeah.
3D
plus jumping.
Everyone just kind of collectively groans.
Yeah, I'm glad that's not a thing really anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would point out Mario 64 as an example of this one, where it wasn't a static camera all the time, but it would be like a revolving camera at the worst possible time.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, okay, the camera's control is wrested away from you. We haven't really mastered like what we need to show you. And yes, you do have a little bit of control over the camera, but if it's sufficiently bad, it might as well be static, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Mario 64 suffers from that to a large extent. Just like
it was like the first game to really tackle the 3D camera. So let's cut it a little bit of slack.
It gets a little bit of slack. However, it's still an example. Like I said, they hadn't found their sea legs yet. Yeah. By the time Soul Reaver came around, they definitely had they didn't really have an excuse. Even on the PC version, like it's fucking atrocious. But yeah, I think it was endemic of games of the time. Ben, what's Robert say?
Moment. Sorry.
I'm sluggish. It's, yeah, I am.
maybe it was that NyQuil you took.
Yeah, you know.
Thought.
Oh, yeah. Cause and effect.
Sorry, I took a nap. I forgot what I took. XP grinding in RPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like that's really disappointing for some of the like older like JRPGs that I'd like to play, but I can't, you know, budget a month of my life for.
Yeah. I think that there is a difference between mandatory grinding and then grinding that you just do to get ahead or because, you know, you like the combat. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess sure. If you like it, it's not technically grinding anymore. But yeah, you look at a game like Earthbound where, you know, especially at the beginning, you really have to invest some time before you attack the arcade, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It just feels antiquated.
I guess the argument for, not that there's a strong argument for, but like the idea is to make you feel like you earned this, right?
Yeah, yeah. But
it's just kind of better ways to do that.
I think that we just like in recent times have renegotiated what it means to have your time respected. And that's what a bunch of these come down to, honestly, is, you know, please respect my time as a player. And grinding fits that. Whereas, you know, back then, you know, I wasn't cognizant, so I didn't know what the discussion was. But I get the sense that it wasn't that bad of an idea, you know, that it wasn't that bad of an experience back then, just because, you know, people really didn't know anything else.
It's like, holy crap, I'm controlling what's on the screen.
Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of thought on what you were doing.
I assume that the world was in black and white back then. Yeah. That is funny. Let's see here. David, what does Tim say?
Kim says, the name Game of the Year Edition. Seems like half the games that are re-released with that moniker either didn't receive an award at all, or it just got Game of the Year from some small-time website nobody cares about. I wish the game industry could agree on a new name for these things. Any ideas?
I think that occasionally, like, they'll come out with like the Ultimate Edition, or there will be something that is appropriate for the theme. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, but yeah, the Game of the Year thing, especially that last one, which is like there are so many people who could give games of the year. Like we talk about Game of the Year on this, so like if I say, oh man, you know, Gone Home gets the Game of the Year, are they going to release a game, you know, the level Gone Home Game of the Year Edition? Like,
and would you, I think would the you last complain? 2 years, not really. I've given Game of the Year to a game that didn't even come out that year.
Yeah, I've been meaning to talk to you about that. Time is linear. Yeah.
But, this is actually a relief because I thought it was just me that was like, wait, but didn't these games not get Game of the Year? But yeah, I just saw Borderlands, a game or a Machine for Pigs Game of the Year Edition is coming out.
Yeah,
so. They're doing like a big celebration thing online. I've been tempted to go check it out, but I guess not that tempted.
bunch of people have been playing it.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Dennis, how about Jala?
Jala says required tutorials.
Wonk.
Is that a wonk wonk face?
It's a face. It's the greater than symbol face.
Yeah, that. While I understand that some players may need to have everything spelled out to them, requiring you to play through dummy stages is incredibly irritating and lowers replay value.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah. I hearken to the Matt Hazard tutorial level where he complains throughout the entire thing about it being a tutorial level.
Yeah.
I feel like the best games are the games that have that, but don't make it obvious. Like, I feel like Portal does a pretty good job of this, of, you know, having a lot of tutorials, but then, you know, it's just early puzzles.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, teaching you to play by making you play versus having training wheels on in a very obvious way. And just like a bunch of stuff with video games, you know, the less the designer's hand is visible, the better.
Yeah. Anytime the action stops and a dialogue pops up with a, you know, do a blah, 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 blah to blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Press X to continue. Mm-hmm. You have failed.
Yeah. Or if it's like a Rockstar thing where it pops up and says, you know, here's how you do it. And then it's on for 3 seconds. You can never find it again.
Dude, I was going to complain about that. Yeah, because they do that in Grand Theft Auto. And they do Red Dead Redemption to this day. I don't know how to do the gun duel. It just came up for that 1 second. And I was like,
Entire systems explained in those fleeting dialogue boxes that are irretrievable.
It's like... I was going to gripe. They did something like that in GTA 5 where teaching you how to land when you're in a parachute. But like, they don't bring up the message when you need to land, they put it up at the very beginning when you have no need for it. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
The beginning of the game, it's like, you know, welcome to GTA 5. You press start on the menu screen. It gives you instructions how to land a parachute.
Yeah.
Just a page of controls that flashes. And then, all right, good to go.
It's like the at a Grand Theft Auto game, the controller diagram splash would be horrible.
Oh,
right?
My God, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'll never remember all this.
Well, on the other hand, you know, I think for Dark Souls, we can just agree that the cemetery was actually the tutorial level, and what they were trying to teach you is, we're going to F with you.
Yeah.
Oh, man, ship out, get real. Yeah.
But you gonna die.
Yep, you gonna die. let's see here. Whose turn is it? I forget.
I think it's yours.
Good. Okay, Phil says, always online connections and games that don't require it. Having been stationed outside the U.S. in places where the internet is slow and spotty at best, it really bothers me how many game companies forget that about markets and areas that don't have a strong internet infrastructure. This is especially true for soldiers that are deployed. Yeah. Yeah. That definitely rings true. And that, I think that's a bigger discussion than we should have here. But yeah, let people play their games offline. Like, I understand that, you know, you can technically do things if you can take it for granted that everybody's going to be online, you know? But, you know.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be a rule of thumb if it's something that you couldn't even admit to in a press release, which always online is.
Yeah.
It's probably a bad idea.
Yeah, if you can't be upfront about it.
Yeah. Hmm. Oh, and Phil, thanks for your service.
Yes, thank you. Yes. So we should probably throw in some of ours before we wrap things up. I'll do mine real quick. Poor audio mixing in games. You know, where they try and do it procedurally, and like the dialogue is super, super quiet, and then the music or whatever is like doesn't duck under it, or there's a sound effect, or somebody else's dialogue cuts over it. I'm looking at you, Bethesda, especially in regards to the subtitles. You're trying to pay attention to the through line of a thing, but because they just kind of like figured, okay, set it and forget it programming, as opposed to actually checking if it's going to work in, you know, most situations, really, really big problem. And like, there are tons of games where they don't really even have an excuse. Like, it's in an actual cutscene where they could have gone in and messed around with it. But they just don't. Pursuant to that, kind of like along the same lines, when a game doesn't include subtitles, it's increasingly rare. However, you know, it's still unforgivable whenever it happens, right?
So the worst offender on all of those fronts is the Ratchet and Clank games.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know who from Insomniac, you know, let this through. But every, and there's like 10 of them, so they should have learned by now. But every game always has the dialogue, you know, played during a hectic fight scene, and it's always like dialed down far enough that you can just make out that someone is talking, but you can't actually hear anything that they say. They'll also do the things where, like, you know, the person is up on TV screens around you.
Yeah,
but again, environmental, which, good idea, except when you put me in the middle of a fight and you have the audio way down, I'm not really incentivized to look at the screens very much because, you know, you'll kill me and force to start the area over. Mm-hmm. At the same time, then they'll try to do like sight gags, and it's like, then, you know, the audio plays into the sight gags, but you're not looking at them. So even if you could understand the audio, it doesn't make any sense. And it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Audio mixing terrible. Ben, how about you?
I was thinking the only one I could come up with was escort missions. That seems to always be like upsetting and never really elicits positive emotions. So
protectiveness, not
like, so Last of Us did a good job, but that was because you don't have to manage
right.
her health. Was it Ellie's health? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Let's do a couple of reader ones and then we'll hit you and David Dennis. Whoever wants to go next, read Giola.
I'll read it.
Yeah, yeah. Ben. Yeah.
when my favorite podcast forgets to post the multiplayer.
Sorry.
Also, when you realize that the gameplay isn't fun and just slogging through something to get to the next info dump cutscene.
Yeah. When you sunk cost fallacy that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Far Cry, maybe. I don't know. I was trying to think of examples for that. But yeah.
Any JRPG?
Yeah, pretty much. I thought you were asking a question, but you were actually positing a range of things.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Agreed. Let's see here. Christopher Schley, who wants to read that one?
I can take that one.
Yep.
Fucking checkpoint saving. Seriously, what year is this? Want to save when I want and where I want, not die, and then spend 72 hours watching the same unskippable cutscene because they're already suck ass at your overpowered boss because you already broke. Sorry, I need to click. Because you already broke mechanics, tease me into making a character too underpowered to fight this dude with promises of being able to actually not play as a tank. Please, studio, stop adding your bad decisions to my already horrible gaming abilities. I'm mad as hell. I'm not going to take it anymore.
Get shot. That's how that movie ended. I'm not recommending that you get shot. In fact, I would strongly advise you not to.
Pretty much that. I like Checkpoint as a additional saving thing. Particularly for games that do it really well, you know, so that I can kind of just play through.
Yeah.
But, what game was I playing recently that didn't do that? A lot of games, you know, it'll be a thing where, like, I want to play for half an hour, but, you know, it'll checkpoint every hour. And, that's so annoying.
Yeah, that strikes me. Yeah. Again, it's under the whole don't waste my time, right? Don't make me redo more stuff than I need to.
I think it's also it's a kind of a remnant of the same era as Limited Lives. We're like, hey, you have to get through this in one go. Otherwise, it's not real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Good.
I was going to say, he actually touched on mine, which is the unskippable cutscene, specifically cutscenes right before a difficult area.
Mm-hmm.
So the worst offender is, I think, the final area of the original Splinter Cell game had, no joke, like a 5-minute cutscene.
Oh, God.
That couldn't be skipped and was probably the most difficult area in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So literally I got to the point where I would fail and I would just walk out of the room and go get something to eat.
Yeah, otherwise you just stay there and steam.
Yeah.
But I ran into that playing Eternal Darkness here recently. No checkpointing at all, which swings too far in the other direction. Like, you know, you just get like 3/4 of the way through a chapter, die, forget that you didn't save, because A, you can save anywhere, so you're not always hitting a save point and doing that. And B, you go back to the beginning, and every single chapter begins with an unskippable cutscene that's several minutes long.
Ugh.
So not only are you replaying likely 40 minutes of content, and again, that falls down to me, but still, just press A. Let me press a button to skip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, this actually wasn't mine, but on the other hand, something that does annoy me is in, like, multiplayer games, other people skipping the front cutscenes, or like them trying to skip it and a little box coming up telling me to say if I want to skip it or whatever.
Yeah. The latter one doesn't bother me too much. But, you know, it's just kind of like, okay, vote to skip this kind of thing. But
yeah.
Dennis, why don't you take us home with, or at least in the reader responses with Phil.
Sure. Yeah. Phil kind of comments on Chris's thing. He says, on a side note to that, Chris, this is 2013. I'm glad. I was kind of worried about that question. Cutscenes need three things, and I totally agree with this. This is great. Optional subtitles, the ability to skip, and the ability to pause them in case real life gets in the way, which it always does.
Yeah, It's hilarious. I think the first game that I played that lets you do that was Xenosaga Episode 1, but it really, really came in handy for Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, Xenosaga was kind of
Cole, I believe there. I paused it for like an hour into the cutscene, went to your house to hang out, and then went back and played the rest of it.
And Old Snake got a little older.
Yeah, because Xenosaga, I mean, that game was like mostly cutscene, wasn't it?
That it was.
Yeah.
Huh. David, how about you? What upsets you?
You know what really grinds my gear? No. I think mine actually kind of goes back to something Dennis was talking about with the dialogue trees. One of them that really annoys me is when there's background information you know or don't necessarily know, and they give you the option to ask about it, and the character's like, "What are you, an idiot? How can you not know that?"
Yeah,
yeah.
It's like I can understand like some games will actually like posit like an actual decent reason for you not to know, like. Yeah. You know, some of the early ones in Skyrim are like the, "Oh yeah, you're a foreigner, aren't you? Yeah, this is what's happening." Like, that's tolerable, but just don't. I know that just really annoys me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, no, and that gets down to how do you write a good audience surrogate?
Yeah. See, I think the thing that's so bad about that, though, is nothing is added by that. Like, all you're doing is purposely breaking, suspension of disbelief. If you just had them answer you, no one would notice, like, "Oh, my character actually should know that."
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's funny, by trying to accommodate suspension of disbelief, they are, in fact, breaking suspension of disbelief. That, like you said, if no one called attention to it, you wouldn't even think about it. Whereas trying to have this elaborate workaround for why would someone ask that if they're, you know, from this world or this great hero, it just calls attention to the fact that it's out of place.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yep. Yeah, so I believe that is... Dennis, you had a thing too, right? Or did yours, or was yours in the previous...
Oh, I tagged mine on to the unskippable cutscene.
Okay, cool. So yeah, that's the multiplayer. Thank you everybody for participating, especially on such short notice. You guys fucking rule. If you want to participate, that is on the Facebook. I believe it's public, so you don't have to be a Facebookian to see it. And you know, there are the usual channels that you can respond on with that. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You guys ready to button it up?
Let's button it up.
How you doing? How you doing, Ben?
I'm asleep.
Okay, cool. Things you can do, things you can watch out for. There's the usual stuff, like us on Facebook, as we just mentioned. Rate us, review us on iTunes, subscribe there. That helps us out. If you don't iTunes, you know, us, you can subscribe in your podcast app of choice. Let's see here. We'll do the Twitter stuff at the end. We've got the duckfeed.tv/tipjar if you're going to be buying anything on Amazon. Spooky costumes for Halloween, or if you're doing Christmas shopping early, that doesn't add anything to your purchase. It gives us a little kickback, and that goes a very long way towards covering the costs of running the network. Yes. Let's see here. As I mentioned, it is October. Things are about to get spooky. Keep an eye on the website, the blog, for kind of this new thing that I've been talking about forever. That is no secret, but I'm ready to get the ball rolling on it, I think, now that Portland is out of the way. Additionally, if you are interested in hearing me be called a trash monster for having owned a Genesis as a kid, go to listen to the most recent, as of this publishing, episode of Retronauts. It is a live panel at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo. So I was fortunate enough to join Bob Mackey and Ray Barnholt and another special guest, Kevin Gifford, of the podcast Fun, on the Retronauts Live panel at the Portland Retro Games Expo to talk about the Sega Genesis. I feel like I got a couple of good lines and I got some laughs, which is fun. So go check that out. It was a good time. I think that's just about everything. Did I miss anything, you guys?
You might have said check out other shows. They're all good.
Yeah. We have a whole network. It's all good. Yeah. So Twitter stuff. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I'm at D Furia on Twitter.
I'm at MoneySmith777.
I am at Merkelizer on Twitter.
We never said our names. My name's Cole Ross.
Oh, Dennis. Hi.
David.
Yeah. We're on David. A first name basis now.
Yeah, yeah.
My name is Dennis, and I'm on a podcast.
Yeah.
Hello, Dennis.
Take it one recording session at a time. Yeah. No, it's always good to provide context for people's voices because sometimes it's hard to identify. Yeah. So, but until next time, keep it real. I don't know. I'm tired. I think Ben has rubbed off on me.
Yes.
So, yes. Sweet. Cool, you guys. I hate to cut it short, but I need to go to bed because I am desperately tired.
Nah, hit it.
Yeah, yeah, there are graphics and stuff that reveal that, like maps and stuff that reveal that Portal takes place, like Aperture Science Labs is like to the east of Cleveland.
That is truly more horrifying than anything else that happens in the game.
Yeah.
It could be Detroit. It's not Detroit. I mean, they're not that evil.
Well, you know, like Detroit is a condition that spreads. Like I'm, we have to chop off this limb or else the Detroit will spread to the body.
Oh man,
I really hope we don't have viewers from Detroit.
Oh no, they're all juggalos. It's fine. And post rail or post roll, there we go.
Yeah.
Knocking
post
them out.
Rail on juggalos.
Boom. Oh man! So like at work, I'm the guy who knows everything.
Only at work.
No. I mean, just but like at work, I kind of have that reputation around the place, and you know, there's like the guy that I stand next to. He's a producer. He's from Detroit, and he was like, he was talking about something, and you know, he said, "Oh, Cole, you know about this, like juggalos, right?" And I was like, and he just like, you know, he was going on, and of course, yes, I know about juggalos. I follow the thread about the gathering every year on Something Awful, and you know, it's a point of humor. But I looked at him, and I was like, why would you pin me as somebody who would know about juggalos? He was like, no. It's like, no. And he was like apologetic. Like, no, I wasn't calling you a juggalo. Please don't. It's like,
please don't sue the company.
Yeah. It's like shot for less.